First of all, I want to say it's just wonderful having the Sorella here. We've had your fratelli many times. It's wonderful finally to hear from you, Sorella. Thank you so much for being here. Today's lesson from the Gospel of Luke comes in the middle of Luke's version of the Christmas story. And this passage is often, it's overlooked when we tell the story of Christmas using Luke's version of the story. But it is a remarkable passage. Now, in order probably to understand what is remarkable about this morning's lesson from the Gospel of Luke, I think it's important first to understand what's remarkable about Luke's version of the Christmas story. And that is that in Luke, the women, the sorelle, do almost all of the talking. And that is remarkable. You know, the Bible is mostly about men. Men do most of the talking in the Bible. The male point of view is usually expressed without women receiving even an afterthought. Now, there are some exceptions to this. The book of Ruth, for example, or the book of Esther, the Song of Solomon, and there's some stories in Genesis and in the Judges in which women take center stage, but these are the exception to the rule. And the Gospels, for the most part, really are no different. Women in the Gospels generally are relegated to supporting roles or even limited to roles in the chorus, right? You take Matthew's telling of the Christmas story, for example. In the Gospel of Matthew, when Matthew tells the story of Christmas, Joseph does all the talking. Mary doesn't utter a single word. In fact, in Matthew, the only time we hear from women is indirectly when we hear of their tremendous grief after Herod kills every male child in Bethlehem trying to prevent Jesus from being born. But in Luke, the women do almost all of the talking. It's Elizabeth, the mother of John the Baptist, and the wife of Zechariah, and Mary, who's the mother of Jesus. And they don't just have the best lines. They really pretty much have all the lines. Now, there's an angel who shows up a couple of times, but I'm not prepared to speculate on whether the angel is a male or a female or both or neither. Other than that, there are two men who speak, both priests. One says something at the very end of Luke's Christmas narrative. And then there's Zechariah. Zechariah is whose words we hear this morning. He's the father of John the Baptist. And he first shows up at the story, in the story of Christmas according to Luke. Zechariah first shows up at the very beginning when an angel, male, female, neither, both, I don't know, but an angel shows up and tells him that after years of fertility, he and his wife finally are going to have a baby. Now, he expresses an understandable measure of skepticism about this. And as a punishment, the angel shuts him up for 40 weeks. When Zechariah finally is able to speak, after this long-awaited child is born and named John, Zechariah then regains the use of his tongue, and the first words out of his mouth are words of praise. These are the words that Sally read to us before the sermon. And they exist as something of a postscript in the story of John the Baptist, which is to say that they're not unimportant, but they are a bit of an afterthought. They don't move the story forward in any way. And here's what I find remarkable about this. I could easily imagine Zechariah responding to 9 months of silence with an outburst of bitterness. After all, it has been months since he's been able to speak his mind. And he might have been a bit angry about that. It probably is safe to say that Zechariah was not particularly used to not talking. He was a man, and he was a priest. Chances are pretty good that he had spent years getting used to people coming to him with questions. Talking was probably part of Zechariah's self-identity. He was, after all, a man of the cloth. I have some experience with this. Given the choice, not talking is generally not our first inclination. God may have have created us with two ears and a mouth, but we don't do a good job of taking cues from human anatomy. I don't like anybody telling me not to talk. So I can imagine that if I were made unable to talk for the length of a pregnancy, the first words out of my mouth might be expressions of pent-up frustration and anger after so much time of not being able to speak. It is never easy to stop talking. I don't care who you are. If you doubt me, think of all the firstborn children you know. For every firstborn child, there's a sacred season, one that's a holy trinity. You know, it's me and my folks, right? And then suddenly along comes this other sibling, this little interloper, and I have to share the talking space? Someone else is going to want to get in a few words, and my parents are going to listen? Oh, hell no. True story. I once knew a woman in her 60s who confessed to me that she still hadn't forgiven her younger sister for being born. I suspect this also might be part of why such nastiness can prevail on social media. Most people's ideas and insights are completely ignored, even by their friends and their family. And often enough, that sense of being ignored, being silenced, it creates an environment in which resentment and anger can fester and grow. And then so suddenly Twitter comes along, right? And there's this illusion that someone might actually be listening. And of course, not everyone responds to the possibility of finally being heard with grace. In fact, a whole lot of people become total jerks when suddenly they think someone may be listening. It's an expression of all of that pent-up anger and resentment for having to be quiet for so long. But you know, Zechariah in this story, after not being able to talk for all that time, he offers us a better way. When he loses and then regains his ability to talk, he speaks good words. He's not bitter or resentful. He is filled with gratitude and with praise. Somewhere over the course of three trimesters, Zechariah realized that nothing bad was going to happen if someone else got a chance to speak her truth, to sing her praise, to narrate her story. In fact, maybe it could be a really, really good thing. And if his words were but a postscript, so what? You know, as good as Zechariah's hymn of praise may be, it is not as powerful as what Mary sings earlier in the chapter. And so her words really should be at the center of the story. And that's not a bad thing for Zechariah. That's a good thing for Zechariah. It's good for all of us. And so the message I get when I read Zechariah's song is this. It's okay to sing the postscript. If you are someone who is used to taking center stage, used to delivering all the best lines, used to being the big star, used to being the center of attention, it is okay to step back, to take a secondary role, or even to watch from the wings. In fact, if the Christmas story from Luke tells us anything, it's that those of us who talk too much, we really need to see the floor, to listen more, if we want to see holiness incarnate. This is not to say we should be entirely silent. Rather, it just means that we should wait for the right time to speak. And chances are it will be after someone else gets a chance. Maybe someone who, because of historical realities or social norms or religious mores or political reasons, hasn't had a whole lot of opportunities to speak in the past. When someone like that gets a chance to talk, silence from everyone else is a blessing. Now, there's a corollary to this message. And in fact, the corollary is so important, it's probably it overshadows the original message, rendering the message, like Zechariah's song, to be something of a postscript. And this is the corollary message. If you are someone who historically or traditionally has not been given a whole lot of opportunities to speak up, please do speak up. Even if it means those who traditionally hold forth will have to experiment with being quiet for a while, please speak your truth. Please tell your story. Please sing praise as you know how. One of the ways that frequent talkers hold on to their place on the stage is by making believe that convincing others, by convincing others in the fantasy that, you know, if I stop talking, the world is going to fall apart. If I let someone else have a turn, it will be a disaster. This is why institutions and organizations have such a hard time changing. I know this is true of a lot of churches. You know, we're happy to have new people get involved in the leadership of the congregation, provided those new people don't bring any new ideas with them. Provided they don't change the way we've always done things. This, of course, is other congregations, dearly beloved, never us, right? And it's not just the church. All sorts of organizations try to keep new voices silent. I mean, look at the new Congress. An historic number of women have been elected to the House of Representatives. And a good number of these new women who've come to the House of Representatives are African American or Native American or Hispanic or Muslims, or they're out lesbians. And they have a lot to say. And whatever you think of their politics, whatever you think of their policy ideas, I hope they'll say it. And I hope the party leadership and the rest of the political establishment in Washington will listen. Because something good just might happen. And we need good news. And that usually is the case. It usually is the case when those long relegated to supporting roles finally get the chance to lead. Something good happens. Holiness is born among us. So if you are someone who hasn't had a whole lot of opportunities to be in the spotlight, don't ever apologize for speaking up, for singing your song, for telling your story. If you get the chance, take it. If you don't get the chance, try to make a chance. For the message of Christmas is this, especially in the Gospel of Luke. Christ isn't born among us when powerful people decide the time is right. Christ is born among us when shepherds hear the song of angels. Divine beauty and holiness are not born when men hold forth in ways that leave no room for the fresh perspectives and new insights of women. Rather, God's presence dances into the world accompanied by the songs of the sorella, the songs of the sisters, the songs of women. And that's not just then. That's now. So sing your song. Lift up your words of praise. Tell your story. Do this whoever you are. And if you're someone used to the limelight, know that your contribution may be something of a postscript. And that is okay. In fact, it's good. Just as it's good for voices long silenced to tell us that Christ is being born in Bethlehem. Amen.